Let me start by thanking the organizer for this invitation to give the talk here. And what I want to talk about is this DNA replication fork repair by RET. The purpose of doing this particular modeling is our effort to understand helicase activity during replication mechanism of DNA. And so I will start with this broader problem of DNA replication, and then come to this RET-G part. The complexity of this replication process was mentioned in the first talk yesterday, and I'll just show you this case here that this DNA, double-stranded DNA, needs to be first opened up by this object, that's the helicase which leads the process, and then the copies of DNA needs to be made on the two strands. And there is one DNA polymerase which can follow the helicase and make the copy, but the other one, since DNA polymerase has a very directed motion, in the other strand it has to go in the opposite direction, and therefore it makes these small patches of DNA, and when the helicase opens up a little bit of this double-stranded molecule, this DNA polymerase has to get up from this strand, go to the right position and do the job again, and somebody else will have to reconnect them. Each of these objects can be isolated, they can be put in the test tube, and they work on their own without the requirement of the others. But all of them work together for a long, long time. Long, long time means 20 minutes, 30 minutes in this viscous environment in any living system. And therefore, this is a major problem. Also, every biology textbook would consider it as a major problem, that what gives this correlation in the investigation. And after I think almost 40 years since the discovery of double helix, it was proposed that probably there is something else. This is very complicated. There is probably something else that's called a replisome. That during this replication process, all of these objects actually stay together and they do their job, except that the DNA now goes through this object called replisome, which in the physics language you would call a bound state, and goes through this bounce in a very, very particular way so that this replication process can continue. There are certain other aspects of this problem which I will not get into it because I want to focus on this motion only in this particular talk. And therefore what one sees is that there is this problem. The problem is that each object is independent. That's how they were discovered. They can be isolated. They will work on their own, but they all act in a very highly coordinated fashion. And the question is, what keeps them together for so long? If replisome exists, why is it that it has never been observed? Why is it that it's almost impossible to reconstruct a replisome in a test tube? But it exists, if it exists as a bound state, it exists in a bound state for 20 minutes and it cannot be reconstructed in a test tube. So there is something more fundamentally important or something we are missing here. And from a physics point of view, I would like to pose the question is, what produces the correlation in dynamics? This correlated dynamics is the fundamental physics question of this replication process. And for replisome, what produces the bound state? Is there a new force that will produce the bound state? And we don't believe that there can be any new force in biology. We believe that all the forces are known, all the interactions are known. Only common feature, whether it's the correlation in the first model or the existence of the bound state as a replisome, the only common feature is this existence of a wipe of the whole thing works at the junction. What one needs is the junction point of a bound state of the double helical DNA and the open state of DNA. And this is the junction point, and we believe that it is this wipe off which is the most important thing. So let's go back to helicase. That's the thing we want to understand before getting into this complex DNA replication process. The helicase is a motor which moves on DNA and it moves towards the zip phase. So there are two phases. One is the open phase, which I will call the unzip phase, and the other one is the bound phase, which is the zip phase. And helicase, the conventional helicase. Conventional helicase moves from the unzip side, from the open side to the closed side, and it opens it up, unzips it, And there are actually many helicases. It's not one or two. Even a simple organism like E. coli has almost 20 helicases. And it's not clear why so many are needed. But what one sees that for all the helicases that have been studied so far, that a helicase maintains two strands of this open DNA at a separation, which is much larger than the zinc cell. In the physics language, what you would like to say is that a helicase maintains DNA in a fixed distance ensemble. There are two conjugate ensembles. The two relevant ensembles in this problem would be that a fixed distance ensemble and its conjugate ensemble would be a fixed force ensemble. But that's not a complete story. We will need something more to it. Now the problem of Red Sea, that suppose this whole process is continuing, replication process is continuing, and there is one nick or lesion on the leading strand, and that stalls the fork. The fork cannot move, the helicase cannot move because there is a cut, or there is something sitting there so that it cannot move, the helicase stops, and the whole assembly just disperses. The whole process stops, but life cannot stop like that, and that's where Red Sea comes in. And the Red G mediates a fork reversal. What it does, this is taken from this crystal structure paper that appeared in 2001, that this Red G comes and again sits right at the Y fork, and this is called in biology, this is called Y fork, that part is the bound state, and these are the open state. This Red G has three components. This is called the wedge domain, which keeps the two strands of DNA at a separation bigger than the bound state distance. And then there are two other components which sit on the bound state side. And their model is that it does some sort of activity which is shown by this arrow, so that it moves in the backward direction. So this yellow one is the one which can elongate, but there is a problem on the leading strand. The red one has stopped. And therefore it moves backwards. Conventional helicase would have gone from below to the upward direction, but this Red G now goes from up to down direction in this particular figure. And it continues to take the Y fork in this from the zip to the unzip side. It reopens this yellow part until it hits the open end of the red part. And once it meets the open end, it creates this chicken foot. Configuration and it disperses. Other objects come and sit there and continue the process with the repair and so on. Our aim at this point is not to understand the whole complicated thing. What we would like to do is to show that there is a way of understanding helicase activity through this Y-fork mechanism, and what we would like to see if the same procedure can be adapted for Reg G to understand this fork reversible mechanism. So the question is there a common approach to address the difference between the standard helicase going from unzip to the zip phase and opening the Y fork, and Red G moving from zip to the unzip phase and doing this Y fork reversal? So our approach would be more simple physics model type approach. And as I said, there are two ensembles to worry about. This double-stranded molecule will have two ensembles. One would be that I keep the two endpoints at a fixed distance, or any two points of the double-stranded molecule at a separation x. So this is a fixed distance ensemble. It will be in the equilibrium situation. This will be characterized by a free energy, which depends on this separation x and temperature. The conjugate ensemble would be a fixed force ensemble, which could be done in many single molecule experiments, that one pulls with a force G, and it will be characterized by a free energy which depends on the force and temperature. In the fixed distance ensemble, one would like to calculate the average force required to maintain the distance. In this case, given a force, one would like to calculate the average separation for the two strands of the molecule. What has been observed or predicted in the last few years is the existence of a force-induced unzipping transition. It was first proposed by us, and then there have been many significant clarifications and results, especially from Trieste and Padova, and also from China. And this unzipping transition is now well established, that there is a force-induced unzipping transition. It's a first-order transition. And the origin of this transition is actually the competition between base pairing or monomer attraction and the orientation, bond orientation along the force. So this competition gives a temperature-dependent critical force. And one can compare the two ensembles again. In the fixed force ensemble, there is a critical force at which depends on temperature, T is below the melting point. And if the force is below this critical force, it will be in the zipped state. And if it is above the critical force, it will be in the unzipped state. In the fixed distance ensemble, the situation is different. If you maintain the two ends at a distance x, the system always phase separates. It's always at a junction which part of which will be in the zipped state and the other part will be in the unzipped state, and that's a Y fork. And therefore, what is a Y fork in biology? In our physics language, it's a coexistence of two different thermodynamically distinct phases of DNA, and therefore the junction point is special. It's like a domain wall. And therefore, this whole activity occurring at the Y fork in biology is not an arbitrary thing. That Y junction has some special identity of its own. And therefore, this configuration, when we maintain these two legs, this part is the unzipped part and this part is the zipped part. And Y fork is this region where we have to identify the domain wall or the kink or interface, whatever we want to call it. And our hypothesis is that the effect of helicase is to set this interface in motion. Okay, so let's go get back to the conventional helicase picture. DNAB is the most important helicase in E. coli. It is a hexameric helicase. It's like a ring going through DNA. It has no other activity except that it maintains the distance. And it has a motor action which tries to go through the zip state. There is another one which is called PCRA, which again has a domain which maintains the distance which maintains the distance of the two open strands, but also it has a hand which just goes to the Y fork and tries to pull the two strands apart which are in the zip phase. So the model we would like to propose is that we have this coexistence. If you keep the helicase phase, it will be in thermal equilibrium. There will be phase coexistence, that's the Y fork with the domain wall somewhere there. And this effect of motor action or this hand is to create an instability only at the interface. What it is trying to do is that at the interface, it's trying to make the bound state unstable or metastable so that the unzipped phase is favored. But in the bulk, it should be in the coexistence region. And that's what we are trying to say, is that there is a local instability in the problem, but no bulk instability. So we start with this coexistence picture. We use a Landau type approach. So we introduce this instead of x, I will call it phi because it scales, make things simple. Phi equal to 0 is our bound state, phi equal to 1 is our open state. And so in this picture, if phi is slightly negative, that means that it's a highly compressed state, which is what we require for density. And we start with this equilibrium situation when the helicase is this. If we have a static helicase, this red curve is the Landau free energy, which gives me phase coexistence. And the effect of helicase is to create an instability. So if F is the free energy, I have written down the first derivative, which is like a generalized force in the problem. And this generalized force can be written as there are three extrema, so there will be three zeros of the first derivative, which is phi into phi minus half and 1 minus 5, which is a symmetric problem. And this effect of instability, whether it's the motor action or the action of the hand pulling it, is to create an instability. So it adds this extra term plus h in this one, so that it manipulates these two points. I have chosen it so that this remains the same. And then this is the helicase contribution, which creates to make the bound state metastable, but we can also make it unstable, but only in a small region around the interface. And therefore, the total Hamiltonian free energy, whatever you want to call it, it consists of this Landau free energy, which is the free energy density, actually free energy per unit length, and some contribution coming from non-homogeneity, and D is the corresponding elastic constant. And obviously, we will take D to be positive, and positivity of D will play an important role when we come to rate G. So I will explain our methodology in terms of this helical activity and then very quickly apply it to rest. So given this free energy or Hamiltonian, okay, so let me go to Reg Z. This is a crystal structure from the same paper. The Reg Z, these are the three domains. This is called the wedge domain, which is maintaining the distance between the two open strands. That's the double stranded part. And what the crystal structure suggests is that there are these yellow ones which competes with the hydrogen bonds at the interface. And therefore, the way we would like to interpret, of course, we are not working at the atomic level. So our point is that Reg Z is again a helicase which maintains the distance. It's again a fixed distance ensemble, but instead of pulling or making the bound state or the unbound state basically unstable or metastable, it interacts like a surfactant at the surface. So let's get back to standard helicase. There is local instability at the interface. Question therefore is, can there be a moving front? Is there a velocity selection? The question is very similar to bulk instability problem that was studied long time ago in 1937 by Kolmogorov, Fischer, Kolmogorov and a few others. That the equation given our Hamiltonian or free energy, the equation, the overdamped equation of motion is basically del phi del t would be del square phi del z, all constants taken to be 1. Plus F phi. F phi is the derivative of the lambda of free energy. It's a generalized force with this F phi, phi minus half plus h and 1 minus phi. If h is equal to 0, I have the barrier at half, phi equal to 0 and phi equal to 1 at the two thermodynamic states. With the boundary condition that it's open at minus infinity and it's closed or zipped at plus infinity. And H is a local perturbation, the local instability at the interface created by the helicase. So H stands for helicase, is a function of position and time, but it's only non-zero near the interface. So it has to find the interface and create the instability at that point. And if H is equal to zero, if I have a static helicase, there is no propagation. It's a static Y fork. So given this, so we are replacing this helicase by this boundary condition at phi equal to 1 at minus infinity and phi equal to 0 at plus infinity. And given our coexistence, there is a Goldstone mode. Goldstone mode in the sense that I create an interface, but I can create the interface anywhere. Because there is a phase coexistence means the free energy of state to unbound state and the free energy of the zip state is the same, and therefore there is no cost in energy if I shift this domain wall anywhere around here. Z stands for the length of this DNA and I can put it anywhere. Z0 is arbitrary. So helicase therefore has two of jobs. One is to maintain the boundary condition, which is 1 at minus infinity, 0 at plus infinity, and it kills the Goldstone mode. It chooses a particular Z0. If I keep the helicase static, Z0 is fixed. And therefore the helicase motion is therefore this taking advantage of the Goldstone mode is to make this Z0 a function of time. Phi is a function of Z and T2 because two variables, the location on DNA and time. But if it so happens that it's actually a function of Z minus C, a single variable problem, then I have a traveling wave, the fork moves with the velocity C. And therefore our point is to see that is it possible by creating a local instability, this two variable function becomes a single variable function, and then we can identify the velocity of the y fork. And this is again rewriting this equation that if h is equal to 0, then of course what I have is this part which we know from physics, we don't really have to solve any differential equation. We know from a basic argument that this would give me h equal to 0, c equal to 0, it's a static solution. And the whole problem therefore is to create this extra part h phi into 1 minus phi, that's the perturbation part. What is the question of velocity selection? The question of velocity selection is that this h, which is a function of z and t, should now become a function of z minus ct. Helicase should move with the same velocity as the y fork. That's a question of velocity selection. Helicase has its own velocity. Y fork, opening of Y fork is the dynamics of DNA unzipping. That has its own dynamics. Question of velocity selection is that these two velocities must match. The question of replication can then be posed in this way. The DNA polymerase should also move with the same velocity. And therefore, all of these objects which have their own velocity own mechanism should all move with the same velocity, and therefore there has to be a global velocity selection in the problem. So instead of choosing this as a function of z and t, what we will do is to choose this h in an implicit way, that the helicase maintains the boundary condition and it comes and bites at the interface at a particular value of phi h over a certain region delta phi. We could do it either in terms of z or in terms of phi h and delta phi z. It makes life simpler to choose it implicitly in terms of this phi. So we will then choose this helicase activity to treat it analytically. We will choose this h to be a small parameter. Therefore, you can do a perturbation theory that h, this helicase part h into phi, I into 1 minus phi, which is acting in this yellow box region of this interface, is a small perturbation. And therefore, if h is 0, we have a static cell solution, that's the topological chain solution of this problem, which is the interface. And therefore, the whole activity of motion comes from this small contribution delta phi, which has to be a function of z minus c t and t. We are keeping this t there for that to handle transient, but ultimately we will not keep this t. We will consider large time behavior. And phi 0 satisfies the static part of this equation, and one knows the solution of this. So if one cannot find the closed form solution, one can always get it numerically. And this is the topological piece solution of it, and that's our starting part. And once we know that, with this delta phi, we can write down the first order equation that this delta phi is satisfied, and it satisfies an inhomogeneous differential equation. But that's not very scary. This first order differential equation, this inhomogeneous differential equation can be solved using Green's function. What we need to know is this Green's function g for this particular operator. This operator again is not, if we ignore this del del t term, this part is very much like a Schrodinger equation. And in fact, what we will see is that we really don't need to solve any differential equation. Everything is already built in this. But then how do you identify velocity? Phi z t is phi 0 plus this delta phi. And if h is small, t is also small, it's moving very slowly. Therefore, we can do a Taylor series for this delta phi also. And we immediately see that delta phi would have a part which is delta phi 0 t z, the derivative of the static kink. There is a linear t dependent and c. And therefore, once we use this, we solve this first order, this inhomogeneous differential equation for the first correction, and identify the linear term, we will be able to identify the velocity of the front. How do we construct the Green's function? One can go to this space operator, use the eigenfunction expansion. I know it's getting scary, but you should not worry about this because from quantum mechanics we know that this Green's function actually have, once we put this delta t part, it will have this expansion into the power minus t minus t1. T1 is some arbitrary initial time. And therefore all the modes will be jumped out very quickly. So long Cn is positive. And it's a dispatching system, we have not done any crazy approximation, and therefore there is no reason for any time Green solution. So we don't have to do any mathematical proof, we can accept that all the EAs are positive. But the Goldstone mode tells us that there is a zero energy solution. Just take this Goldstone mode of the static kink solution, that's this equation. If I take a derivative of this equation d phi 0 dz, then you immediately see that psi 0 satisfies this equation, which is d phi 0 dz. Therefore, the derivative of the static kink is the solution of this equation with 0 eigenvalue. And if I have a 0 eigenvalue, this term is 1. And when you do the integral of the Green's function over time, that gives me linear time. And therefore, without doing any calculation, without worrying about the spectrum, just accepting the fact that it's a dissipative problem and therefore there cannot be a time grain solution, we immediately see that we don't really have to do any calculation, just this derivative will give us the final sum. And therefore we can write down the solution. The velocity is just this standard Green's function formula. It's the phi 0 prime is this derivative, and the d phi z
delta phi is the local perturbation that is produced, it's an integral, and denominator is the normalization in this mathematical procedure. But actually this whole thing has a very simple physical meaning. The denominator is actually the energy of the interface, energy of the y force, and the numerator is just the change in free energy at the 2 points where the helicase is biting the interface. And what we see is that this has to be a positive quantity, well, as it is positive. And therefore it moves from the unzipped to the zipped side. So this is the methodology that we are going to use for regzi. But as I said, regzi, this where we have put the delta A for the helicase part as an instability, creates a metastability or make the bound state unstable. But regzi is slightly different. It acts at the interface, and therefore what we have to do is to worry about the interface in the regzi problem. Therefore, the model we would like to use for regzi is that it's similar to other helicases in the sense that it's again a fixed distance ensemble, but there is no obvious destabilizing attitude. Its attitude is slightly different, and it competes with the broken pairs at the interface. So what we do is introduce a new variable for regzi. We will work at a very, very simple-minded level, and therefore we consider this variable to be a Gaussian variable, or if it's an oscillator, and y is this extra variable which represents regzi. And so this is our original interface, that's the lambda free energy, which is again the coexistence. Therefore the two minima at phi equal to 0 and phi equal to 1 will have same free energy. G is positive, that's the elastic energy part. Y square is the Gaussian or the oscillator part of for regzi. And I have an interaction of this regzi with the interface. The interface is delta phi delta. And therefore the interaction is between y and delta phi delta. So that's the crucial term here. Now what we need to do is to define couple dynamics for phi and y. As I said, we will keep things very simple. So we'd not like to get into the dynamics of y. Our interest is dynamics of the y part. And therefore what we will do is integrate out y. So we define an effective Hamiltonian by integrating out y. So one can go to the partition function and do that integration out. And one can do that calculation in head very quickly in few seconds. And what one sees is that one will again get back the original looking Hamiltonian, except that d is now replaced by d prime, which is now the original elastic constant minus lambda square by k. K is a positive quantity, that's the stiffness of the d variable, which is of course positive because we don't expect any peculiarity there. Lambda can be of any sign, positive or negative, it occurs with power 2, and therefore this interaction always reduces the elasticity of the interface. What that means is that there is a possibility of this d prime becoming negative, which brings an instability at the interface. And then what we need to do is to put in a higher order term, and that we do from the beginning, that we have this del phi del z whole square, that's the standard elasticity, and we have this del square phi del z square whole square, which we need for stability of the system. And this d prime can be negative. So the regzi model, the dynamics of regzi is now given by this equation. It is del phi del t, d times del square phi del z square, that's the original elasticity contribution to the dynamics. Del 4 phi del z 4 is the new contribution, but that's always there. We generally don't worry about it because d is positive. But the helicase contribution is this new one in red, which is minus h del square phi del z square, and h is chosen such that d minus h is negative only in a small region at the interface. The free energy part is pure phase coexistence. Phi equal to 0 and phi equal to 1 will have the same energy. And therefore the question now is that this small instability of the interface, not of the phase, the phases are still the same. This instability of the phase, can it lead to a moving front? Can it lead to a y-fork? Can it lead to a y-fork motion in the opposite direction? H is non-zero only in a region near phi equal to 0. That's the model we have seen, that it sits at the bound state side. And with negative d, we know that if it was a bulk problem, negative d would give us a modulated structure because the surface energy is now negative, so the system would like to create more of such interfaces. But in our case, it's not a bulk problem, and therefore we you do not have the scope of a modulated structure. The modulated structure for DNA would be that it consists of a periodic arrays of bubbles, which we don't want, and there is no reason to worry about such structures because D is negative only in a small region at the interface. And then we can go through our standard procedure. There is again a Goldstone mode, and therefore the solution is now given by this object, which is the curvature of the interface, and that happens to be negative. And therefore, if it bites on the bound state side, the curvature is negative, and that actually gives us the velocity, which is in the opposite direction. So this is first order perturbation. We may believe it, we may not believe it, and especially with time, what we see is that most people don't believe analytical results unless we show numbers. So to convince people, we all then solve the differential equation numerically. And also, the first order perturbation theory is based on this idea that it's a perturbation around the static solution phi 0. But when we do the dynamics, we are not actually doing a perturbation around phi 0. It's always, the helicase is always biting the interface that's dynamically generated. And therefore, that's also more satisfying that we don't have to ignore anything in such a numerical procedure. So let's get into it. What we did is to use an implicit algorithm to solve this differential equation. There is no random number, no, only error is roundup error, there is no other error in this analysis. We started with a sharp profile at t equal to 0, so it arbitrarily sets that at z equal to 1000. Again, this z is in some small unit which we have taken to be. In principle, we are taking that limit to be 0. And phi is 1 at minus infinity, phi is 0 at plus infinity, and we let the system evolve. This black line shows why we produce this instability. This instability is h phi into 1 minus phi, so, and we change the magnitude of h, and also the width of this black horizontal line. So that's the region where we produce the instability, and therefore in this region the bound state is unstable, and the system would like to go over to the unzipped state, and then due to elasticity, this part will then relax, and that's what we see. And the velocity selection is that it has to move with the same velocity as the front. What we see is that it's actually moving towards the right. It is moving from the unzipped to the zipped side with certain velocity, and that velocity we can then determine from our solution. And what it shows is that we have a moving solution. Of course, it's not symmetric because we have not chosen it at the midpoint. We have shifted it. It's in an asymmetric position. It's also not symmetrical in the z direction. So this gives a moving solution for standard helicase, which should open the DNA. And this is the velocity for different widths of this. So the helicase is now characterized by where it bites, the width of its jaw, and the strength of the bite. So this, for a given width of the jaw, we are changing the strength of this bite, and this is the perturbative region. Of course, it's linear there. And it looks linear, but it's not linear because there is a singularity sitting somewhere there, but I will not get into the issue of those singularities there. Actually, the width is very interesting because this width acts as a finite size cutoff for this bulk singularity that would appear somewhere there, but that's a different issue. We will not get into it. But more interesting is that for a given width, so as the helicase moves, we start with a very sharp interface, as the helicase moves. For a given strength of h, if the width increases, then we know that if width is very large, it should be a bulk problem, and bulk problem velocity can be determined from Fisher-Kolmogorov effort, and that value, and our numerical procedure of course matches with that, which tells us that we have not done any obvious mistake in our algorithm. And again, the perturbative region is this one. So with that, we have the confidence to use it for the reg-g problem. And what we see is that again, we start with an interface, sharp interface, and reg-g comes and sits on the bound state side. So this again shows the current location of this reg-g helicase. It creates an instability, changes the elastic constant in this part of the problem of the interface only to a negative value, and the higher order term stabilizes the system. And what we immediately see is the creation of this local structure there, which is like creating a more compressed state near that. But this local instability is relaxed by the elasticity elsewhere,
and it starts moving in the opposite direction. That we have seen that this negative sign comes from the curvature of the profile, and therefore what we have is a y path moving from the zig to the unzig. This indicates that this could probably be the mechanism for legs motion. But then you see in the dynamics, in the first order perturbation, we were always perturbing around the static solution, which is the monotonic solution. But in this case, we have a structure developed in this region, and our characterization of Reg G is that it bites at a particular value of phi, and if that phi happens to be at the minimum, then it may so happen that there is an effective cancellation, and the Reg G will produce an instability, but it need not move. And that's a special case. So what we have done is to choose the various width parameters and monitor the velocity as a function of time. And most of the time, it actually reaches a steady velocity, depending on where it bites and over what region it bites. But once in a while, if things match properly, if it bites at the right point of the structure, what we get is an oscillating structure, oscillating velocity. What that means is that the object would move, stop, and so on. And there are many cases which do it like that. We are not saying that XG will do that, but there are many cases where this can happen. So this procedure or this approach to y-path motion can give us the possibility of that stop and move type motion of helicases. So with that, let me stop. We just summarize. It's a one-line summary because our ultimate aim is to understand the dynamics of replication. And what we see here is that this destabilization of the interface is a possible mode for reverse motion of gravity. And instability of the bulk phase is the standard motion of a helicase, of the standard helicase. And what we now believe is that the way to understand replication would be to sit in a co-moving frame which is moving with the speed of this helicase, and the remaining part of the replication process should be observed in that co-moving frame. So that's what we have in mind. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, so I just had a couple of things I don't understand. So when you have the y variable, can you go back and discuss its physical meaning? So why? So it's related to Rec G, right? So that's when you. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So it's like we have this interface, and what we are doing is, okay, let's go back to Reg G. Okay, so what we are doing is that we are replacing this by an oscillator again. So it interacts with the interface. And then this is it interacts with the broken bond. So so phi equal to constant, phi equal to constant will be delta by delta, so interface is delta by delta, and this whole object is replaced by now.
Yes. Yeah. And what about the dynamics of H? Am I right that you have a velocity there, that you assume a velocity there?
In this case, for no, we are not assuming that any velocity there. What we are saying is that this velocity is automatically generated. So if I have a moving front, then the velocity of this H should be seen as the velocity of the front.
So that would be related to the Fisher wave that you have in the system, or not?
So it's not the Fisher wave velocity. Fisher wave velocity is the bulk velocity. That's this one.
Ah. And there is no relation, yeah?
There is no obvious relation, because that's why I said there is a phase transition, dynamic phase transition in the bulk at some point. And the width of this helicase actually acts as a finite size cutoff for that phase transition. The singularity is not visible.
So this is
the Fisher velocity. And our numerator gives that number of 30.
Okay.
There is a singularity somewhere there.
Here on this graph, you said that the width is very large, so 100 to 800. What is your units there?
No. Okay, so this is the we have discretized it, so this the delta is there is no, I mean, no comparison with real thing. It's like I have a continuum equation.
Yes.
And when we plot it, we have a delta x, and this number width 800 is in units of that. So this is an arbitrary unit. So we are not putting any angstrom or any scale here.
But
it's a solution of the continuous differential.
Yeah, but at some point you have to make a comparison.
You have to make a comparison, sure, but our model is now too crude to make any comparison. It's more of conceptually correct. Are we getting the right thing from this method? Then, of course, we need to put in the details. The first thing to do would be not to do a continuum approximation. Take the DNA as a discrete model and put the right next.
Did I understand it correctly that what you are modeling is the transition from this open fork to the chicken foot solution? So it's why.
Not up to the chicken foot, it's the moving back fork. That's what we are modeling.
So how does it compare to the other model in the literature? I was thinking of the Julisher and Peterton model.
I have not seen any model.
Well,
all biology models are this model.
There are models.
Even the recent biology papers, it's my very rudimentary knowledge of biology.
There are models and there are experiments, okay? And so there is, in particular, if you are looking at
any. So the model is at that level, not the level you are talking.
But for Elikes, is it for Reggie or? But your theory is also working for normal Elikes or not?
No, normal Elikes, of course, there are many experiments.
Okay.
I'm talking about Reggie.
Okay.
Normal Elikes is a very well studied, and there are many very well defined experiments, measurement of velocity and so on. So, it depends on ATP, it depends on the ions and so on. So, in our case, you see that depends on this on the input we give for this. So you see, our helicase is moving with a certain parameter. So the ATP and so on dependence goes on this parameter. That changes. But again, as I said, I mean, we are not yet making any formal connection with that. So our point would be that we would like to see from experiment some measurement of the elasticity. We want. Can one tell us what that?
We have now a coffee break until about 11, so we'll convene at 1 o'clock for our next speaker, and let's thank